Today I'd like to talk to you about several things. One of them is, what does the cup mean in Scripture? Well, let's take a look at some of these things where the cup is mentioned. And one of the first places we want to start is back in the book of Psalms, Psalm 75. And generally, I think when we get done, you'll realize and understand that the cup is whatever lot in life we are to undergo. And sometimes it's things that we earn, sometimes it's things that are given us, sometimes it just happenstance. But through all of these, the cup is something that Yahweh can control. In Psalm 75, I hope you're there by now, notice in, we'll skip down here to verse 7 where it says, Elohim is the judge. He's the one that is doing these things. We read in verse 7 that he puts down one, and sets up another. And in verse 8, we read, for in the hand of Yahweh there is a cup, and the wine is red. It is full of mixture, and he pours out of the same. But the dregs thereof, all the wicked of the earth shall wring them out and drink them. So Yahweh is talking here about judgment. He's going to bring judgment on the earth. And here he mentions the cup, the dregs that they would drink of. Usually in wine, of course, they added other things from time to time. And now the those wicked ones of the earth are going to drink the whole cup. Let's go to another one over in the book of Isaiah. In the book of Isaiah, we'll put in there in chapter 51. And here again, it's about the cup. Isaiah 51, move on down to verse 17. This one, of course, is talking about Jerusalem, and we're going to talk a little bit more about Jerusalem, because I think today almost every newscast, whether it's on television or radio or what it is, even in the newspaper, Jerusalem is being mentioned more and more and more. So here in verse 17 we read, awake, awake, stand up, O Jerusalem, which has drunk at the hand of Yahweh the cup of his fury, and has drunken the dregs of the cup of trembling and wrung them out. There is none to guide her among all the sons whom she hath brought forth, neither is there any that takes her by the hand of all the sons that she's brought up, and so on. Move on down to verse 22. Thus says Yahweh, Yahweh and thy Elohim, that pleads the cause of his people. Behold, I have taken out of thine hand the cup of trembling, and even the dregs of the cup of my fury. Thou shalt no more drink it again. Verse 23, but I will put into the hand of them that afflict thee, which have said to thy soul, bow down, that we may go over. And thou hast laid thy body on the ground, and as a street to them that went over. I think you'll realize that Jerusalem is mentioned more and more in prophecy, and we should be more alert to what's going on over there as we come nearer to the end of the age. Let's go over to the book of Revelation, just to show that Yahweh uses that symbol of the cup, both in the Old and in the New Testaments. In the book of Revelation, in chapter 14, we won't read all of this, but 14, of course, talks about the ones that do have Yahweh's name in their foreheads. In verse 1, Yahweh's name and Yahshua's name, his name and his father's name. But move on down to verse 10. Actually, it should begin there with verse 8, because that speaks about the end of the age. It says, and there followed another angel, saying, Babylon is fallen, that great city, because she made all nations to drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. Here we have an example of the cup being poured out by a pagan nation, actually a pagan religion. And verse 9 says, the third angel followed them, saying, if a man worship the beast in his image and receive his mark in his forehead or in his hand, the same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of Yahweh, which is poured out without mixture into the cup of his indignation. And he shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. As long as you're in Revelation, go to chapter 16. And notice here, often it talks about the cup. It's actually Yahweh's wrath in most of these verses. Verse 19, for example, Revelation 16, 19. And the great city was divided into three parts, and the cities of the nations fell. And that great Babylon came in remembrance before Elohim to give unto her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. So here we have the great city being split up into three different parts. In chapter 18, let's move over there. Chapter 18 of Revelation. And in verse 4, we have the plea from Yahweh. I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that you be not partakers of her sins, that you receive not of her plagues, warning us not to be confused or mixed up with the Babylon teachings that are going to be more and more pronounced at the end of the age. Verse 5 says, for her sins have reached unto heaven, and Elohim hath remembered her iniquities. Reward her even as she rewarded you, and double unto her double according to her works, in the cup which she has filled to her double. So we have a number of places where this cup is mentioned. And now I want to go back to the book of Zechariah in the 12th chapter. Zechariah, of course, is one of the lessons that we can turn to, because it does get into the end of the age. And most of it has never been fulfilled, although some has been in parts. But in Zechariah, notice here in before we get into chapter 12, notice the last two verses of chapter 11. I found that most of the scholars refer to chapter 11 as being a tirade against the beast system and against the anti-Messiah. Some of it is a little difficult to understand. But anyway, chapter 11, verses 16 and 17 are fairly easy, because verse 16 says, I will raise up a shepherd in the land, which shall not visit those that be cut off, neither shall seek the young one, nor heal that is broken, nor feed that standeth still, but shall eat the flesh of the fat and tear their claws in pieces. What he's really talking about here is the man of sin is really going to take advantage of everything just for himself. Verse 17, woe to the idle shepherd that leaves the flock. The sword shall be upon his arm and upon his right eye. His arm shall be clean, dried up, and his right eye shall be utterly darkened. This is kind of a warning of what's yet to come. And then as we move into chapter 12, you'll notice here that Yahweh talks about the burden that is his. And notice in chapter 12 and verse 1, the first thing he does is gives an account of himself. He says, I am the Almighty. I do all the creating. I am the one that's speaking now. Listen to what I have to say. In fact, it goes on that he is the one for Israel, which stretcheth forth heavens, layeth out the foundation of the earth, and forms the spirit of man within him. So he is the one that is doing the speaking. He says in verse 2, behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of trembling unto all people round about, when they shall be in the siege, both against Judah and against Jerusalem. So now he says that Jerusalem is going to be a cup of trembling for all people, all those that have anything to do with in any way with Jerusalem. And I think most of us know what's going on over there, and the fact that the PLO keeps demanding a part or all of Jerusalem as their capital. The Jews say that'll never happen. And so we have a conflict brewing in the future between the PLO and the Jews themselves. And it's over Jerusalem. And we also know that in addition to this, there are other nations which are interested in what they can do to help settle the issue, whether or not Jerusalem will be a city that will be mandated by the United Nations or what, we don't know. But it wouldn't be surprising to any of us when we read what Yahweh has to say. Just exactly what this is in verse 2, where it talks about a siege. I tried to find out a little more about that, and I've not been able to learn much. Most of them say there's something that Israel is doing, or the Jews are doing in Jerusalem, that is not befitting what the nations really want. And exactly what it is, we're not sure yet. We'll probably see whether they'll be given an ultimatum. Either you do this or we're going to do something. And probably whether it'll be a siege, like the UN has basically done with the people over in Iraq. We don't know. But it's rather interesting. Notice in this, he talks again here about a cup of trembling to all people. Notice in verse 3, when he says, "In that day will I make Jerusalem a burdensome stone for all people. All that burden themselves with Jerusalem shall be cut in pieces, though all the people of the earth be gathered together against it." Now that tells us that whatever the nations try to do to Jerusalem is going to be most difficult. The whole nation will be gathered against it, and yet Jerusalem seems to survive and is able to withstand whatever they're doing, even the siege that's mentioned in verse 2. Verse 4 says, "In that day, says Yahweh, I will smite every horse with astonishment and his rider with madness, and I will open mine eyes upon the house of Judah and will smite every horse of the people with blindness." So now we have, in Jerusalem itself, we have different groups of people. Already we have mentioned here the house of Judah. And then as we move on down to verse 5, notice it says, "And the governors of Judah." So here we have people who apparently are in Judah, in that land, and they have something to do with the rulership. And that still is ahead of us. Exactly what this might be, we're not really certain. But it bears watching. "The governors of Judah shall say in their heart, the habitations of Jerusalem shall be my strength, in Yahweh of hosts, their Elohim." So now we find that the people in Jerusalem, the governors of Judah, are actually going to be depending upon Yahweh. They're going to turn to Yahweh, which is rather unusual, because most of the reports we get, Jerusalem is not a very holy city, even though it's called that. The people there are almost turning their back on Yahweh and doing their own thing without any attention paid to him. As you move on down, it says in verse 6 that in that day, and that doesn't mean a single day necessarily, although it probably will take place in a short time, but he says, "I will make the governors of Judah like an hearth of fire among the wood, and like a torch of fire in a sheaf." So the governors of Judah are apparently going to withstand whatever is being brought against them, and are actually going to persevere, and they're probably going to overcome some of these things. Because it says they'll be like a hearth, a fire, a burning. And also, as you continue reading, it says, "They shall devour all the people round about, on the right hand and on the left." This tells us there's going to be war right around Jerusalem itself. It says, "And Jerusalem shall be inhabited again in her own place, even in Jerusalem." Again, here we have Yahweh telling the end from the beginning. He says it's not going to work out because Jerusalem is still going to be standing. Jerusalem is going to have the rulership, and it'll be the right one. Notice in verse 7, it says, "Yahweh shall save the tents of Judah first." So now we've had the governors of Judah. Now we have the tents, the houses, the places where the people live. He's going to save the tents of Judah first. Well, over in the 14th chapter of this same book, we find that Yahshua is coming back, and his feet will stand in that day upon the Mount of Olives. But before he does that, apparently he's going to fight against Moab and Ammon. And then he will save the tents of Judah first, because it says if he doesn't come back, there'll be nothing left. Now notice it says that he'll save the tents of Judah first, that the glory of the house of David and the glory of the inhabitants of Jerusalem do not magnify themselves against Judah. He's telling us here that the inhabitants of Jerusalem, who may not even be of the tribes of Israel, are not going to be able to glory themselves over Judah, because Yahweh is going to take care of them first. And he says that the glory of the inhabitants of Jerusalem do not magnify against Judah. As you move on down there, we can see that this is an interesting season we're getting into. Just how long this will continue, we don't know, but it's worth watching. Because as you move on down to verse 8, it says, in that day shall Yahweh defend the inhabitants of Jerusalem. That includes everyone. Judah, the house of Judah, the house of David, will all be defended, because Yahweh is going to do it himself. And he that is feeble among them that day shall be as David, and the house of David shall be as Elohim, and as the angel of Yahweh before them. So we have a lot of promises here of what is actually going to take place. What is interesting, I want you to notice in verse 2, we read there about the cup, a cup of trembling for all people. And in verse 3, again, he says that he will make Jerusalem a burdensome stone for all people. So he's speaking here that there Jerusalem is going to be a stone, immovable. It just won't budge. It'll stay right there. And then in verse 6, he makes the governors a hearth, a fire brand that burns and gets rid of the dross and so on. In verse 9, we read, it shall come to pass in that day. This makes it sound as if it will take but a short time when Yahweh goes to work. It won't take him very long. I will seek to destroy all the nations that come up against Jerusalem. And we read in the 14th chapter that there's going to be a lot of those people that will still be coming up against Jerusalem, but they haven't kept the Feast of Tabernacles. And in the 14th chapter of Zechariah, we won't turn there, but that is where they're going to be forced to keep the feast. But notice in verse 10, here again we have Yahweh pouring out his Spirit. And of course, I believe that this includes not only at this time, but it will be on all of his people that are obedient to him. Let's read verse 10. I will pour upon the house of David and upon the inhabitants of Jerusalem the spirit of grace and supplications. And they shall look upon me whom they have pierced, and they shall mourn for him as one who mourns for his only son, and shall be in bitterness for him as one that is in bitterness for his firstborn. The insight we have here is that this will be almost a sudden thing. People will recognize Yahweh's hand in his defense of Jerusalem and the things that they're able to accomplish against the enemies that are surrounding Jerusalem. And so we find here that he says he's actually pouring out his Spirit upon the house of David and upon the inhabitants of Jerusalem. In fact, you can go over to the New Testament. And in fact, I'll skip over there, Acts 3:19, just to see that this is a reenactment of what we actually have had here before. Excuse me. Acts 3:19 says, repent ye therefore and be converted, that your sins may be blotted out, when the times of refreshing shall come from the presence of Yahweh. Over here in the book of Acts, this is called the times of refreshing. Back in Zechariah, it's called the times of salvation for the people of Jerusalem. And verse 20 says, he will send Yahshua the Messiah, which before was preached unto you. And the heavens has to receive him until there's a restoration of all things. And this is what we're striving to do, is restore the things that are not taught today, restore the keeping of the Sabbath, the fourth commandment and the third commandment, the importance of Yahweh's name. because people don't seem to have any idea that Yahweh is angry when the people disobey him and his word. Well, let's get back to the book of Zechariah again. And notice that they will look upon me whom they have pierced. Now, that has to be the Jewish nation. And he says, they shall mourn for him as one mourns for his only son, and shall be in bitterness for him as one that is in bitterness for his firstborn. You know that when the Jews demanded that instead of the one that Pilate offered them, they said that they wanted the son of the father. Yeah, that they actually asked for Yahshua and didn't realize what they were asking for. So I want to move on down here, verse 11. In that day there shall be a great mourning in Jerusalem, as the mourning of Hadad-Rimmon in the valley of Megiddo. That actually took place in the in 2 Chronicles 35. I want to turn over there. 2 Chronicles 35 and verse 22. Because here we have a righteous man who actually was put to death. And let's see, 2 Chronicles, no wonder. 2 Chronicles 35. And beginning there with verse 22. Notice it says, Josiah would not turn his face from him, but disguised himself to go into the battle. He was not to fight there in the battle of the Valley of Megiddo. The archers, we find in verse 23, shot at King Josiah, and the king said to the servants, take me away, for I am sore wounded. So they took him from one chariot, put him in another, and they brought him to Jerusalem, where he died. He was buried in one of the sepulchres. The point that is being made here, of course, is that Josiah was a good king. And we find there that and all Judah and Jerusalem mourned for Josiah. And Jeremiah lamented for Josiah. And all the singing men and the singing women spake of Josiah in their lamentations to this day, and made them an ordinance in Israel. And behold, they are written in the lamentations. What it's saying here is that there will be a mourning and a crying and a weeping and a big lamentations going on around Jerusalem when all this is taking place. It's going to be one of the most saddest times for many that has ever taken place in this century. But notice here, when verse 12 it says, they shall mourn, and every family apart, the family of the house of David apart, and their wives apart, the family of the house of Nathan apart, and their wives apart, and the family of the house of Levi apart, and all their wives, the family of Shimei apart, and their wives apart, and all the families that remain, every family apart, and their wives apart. So there's going to be a great weeping and crying and carrying on. And now I want to close with the next chapter, the first verse or two. Notice it says in chapter 13, in that day there shall be a fountain open to the house of David and to the inhabitants of Jerusalem for sin and uncleanness. And it shall come to pass in that day, says Yahweh of hosts, I will cut off the names of the idols of the land, and they shall no more be remembered. So he's going to remove all the names of all the pagan deities, Ashtaroth and Molech and so on and so forth. And he says that he will cause the prophets and the unclean spirits to pass out of the land. So Yahweh tells us the end from the beginning. He tells us about what's going to happen to Jerusalem. He tells us that's going to be a terrible time. And then he goes ahead and promises us that Jerusalem will still be standing. Yahweh will intervene. He will be victorious. And he will be the one that will get the glory and honor and actually start the taking over of all the territory and the land and set up the kingdom through Yahshua, his son. May we see that day soon. May Yahweh bless you.